And good Friday morning. It's the second hour of the show on 91.5 and KJZZ.org. I'm Steve Goldstein. It's time for the Friday newscap with our own inimitable Phil Latzmer.
And thank you, sir. I'm not sure I know what that means, but it's nice to know. I'm sure the two journalists we have here on our panel know exactly what that means. Kind enough to join us here in our KJZZ studios is the longtime state government reporter for the Arizona Republic, Mary Jo Pitzel. It's good to have you here. Nice to meet you.
Nice to be here.
Also in our studios here in Tempe, we welcome the Los Angeles Times correspondent who's based here and covers the state of Arizona and a lot of the Southwest for that publication, Nigel Duara. Nigel, nice to have you here.
Hey, Phil, thanks. Nice to be in the same city again.
Okay, yeah, another Miamiite. And let's start by hearing some of the voices in the news this week.
You know, no matter how young you are, no matter how small you are, if you shout loud enough, you're going to be heard.
I admire General Flynn. I've had good relations with him. I thank him for his service. But we have a dysfunctional White House.
If the president did know, then that's something that we ought to know.
To me, it's one of the most difficult subjects I have because you have these incredible kids, in many cases, not in all cases. In some of the cases, they're having DACA and they're gang members and they're drug dealers, too.
What we have seen over the past week is aggressive interior immigration enforcement that is raising alarms within the immigrant community.
We upheld the voters' intent when they voted on it, restored and brought money into the state, and we're able to cover other people, people that are desperately in need of health care.
All right, so we heard from there Valley High School student and activist Mikala Terremoto and sounds of the several hundred people at the Islamic Center of Central Phoenix for a solidarity rally over the weekend. Then both of Arizona's U.S. Senators, John McCain and Jeff Flake, on the big news of the week, the forced resignation of National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and President Trump's Russia ties, and then the president on his plans for DACA, followed by UC San Diego Professor of Immigration Policy Tom Wong, and finally former Governor Jan Brewer on the ongoing fight over how Medicaid expansion is funded in Arizona. All right, let's start off with the latest from D.C., some of the impacts here in Arizona. Now, Mary Jo, you're very busy covering the legislature, and, you know, everybody's kind of in a bubble over in Phoenix. Has there been any discussion about, or serious discussion or more discussion than normal about what's been happening in Washington and how it's resonating here?
Well, I'm sure there's lots of hallway chatter about what's happening in D.C. Interestingly, our governor, Doug Ducey, has been very, very quiet about the policies and pronouncements coming out of D.C., with the exception of Medicaid. He has joined a bunch of other governors in making it clear that, yeah, we want repeal, but don't repeal without replace. And last week, the governor did go down to the border and met with General Kelly, the Homeland Security Secretary. But other than that, he's been very, very quiet about, you know, we just don't know where he's at and on some of these issues. And by his silence, I think you can probably impute a few things. We have a couple of Trump loyalists in the legislature. Representative David Livingston likes to stand up every day and talk about, you know, where the Dow is. And I think he's attributing that to the what he believes is the ongoing Trump rally.
Nigel, how about you? From your perspective, you have been down at the border reporting really all around the Southwest about the first 4 weeks of the Trump administration and the impacts. Tell us what's kind of stuck out in your mind.
Well, you know, certainly if you divide it binary into two sides, you have on one side fear and confusion. People are scared of what the executive actions can bring. And on the other side, you have elation and confusion. You've got people who are very happy, excuse me, with what they think is going to happen, but they're still confused as to what actually it's going to bring. Certainly talking to people who live on and around the border, as you probably have all seen, there have been studies showing that it's a unique community there who lives there. A lot of them don't really want a wall, as it were. They want, you know, more bridges and more things building between the two countries. So what we've been hearing a lot of is what's going to happen to our partnership with Mexico? What's going to happen with our economy? What's going to happen to, you know, the border states? So that's a lot of what we've been hearing about.
Again, it seems that Arizona's two U.S. senators continue to be the leading voices pushing back here, both asking for investigations into the Russian hacking and the influence on the Trump campaign, which forced the resignation of General Flynn. You think they will impress on members of the U.S. House, who seem reluctant right now maybe to follow that course if they keep banging the gong here?
Hard to say. I mean, but if there is a groundswell of support in the Senate, and I obviously would have to be led by Republican senators, not the Democrats, they might want to bring the Democrats along. And, you know, there's, I mean, we're 4 weeks into this, so who knows what's yet to come. And, you know, I mean, every day does bring at least one new development.
You know, they're getting a lot of credit. Mary Jo, maybe you can tell me more about that. They're getting a lot of credit for being the sort of opposition folks to Trump. Here are the unanimous positions they have both agreed to: SBA, VA, Treasury, Health and Human Services, Attorney General, Education, Secretary of State. They have gone with Trump's picks so far unanimously on all of those. So it's interesting to me that on the policy side of things, they're getting a lot of credit. But in the actual machinations of how you make the sausage in Washington, they're going right with it.
I think that's an interesting point as well, because one can say things, and obviously I think that Senators McCain and Flake say things that they believe, certainly. But ultimately, when it comes down to voting for things, one thing that I thought was interesting, Senator McCain, I'm totally speculating here, which our two journalists wouldn't do, but Senator McCain voted against Mick Mulvaney, who is the nominee to run the Office of Management and Budget. And ostensibly, it was related to the fact that he was against certain funding for the military. And yet, Mick Mulvaney is a very close friend of Representative David Schweikert. And there was speculation Schweikert was going to run against John McCain. So we never quite know whether these things are as pure as they sound, because it did sound like Senator McCain was more concerned about some of the other appointments more than Mulvaney was. And yet Mulvaney's the one he actually voted against.
Yeah, no, good point. And I think everybody's waiting for this next shoe to drop here with the announcement that's supposed to come next week with the latest on the immigration enforcement following the well-publicized case of Guadalupe Garcia de Rios last week. Have we heard, Nigel, of any similar cases here or elsewhere of families being separated, immigration roundups? What's the latest you've heard on that? A lot of people obviously are concerned.
We're keeping a very close eye on it. There's been isolated cases we've seen in Washington State, in Atlanta. And again, to be clear on some of these, you know, Garcia de Rio was a specific case where she had gone through the entire system and was being prepared for deportation. So it's hard to me to imagine her case being, you know, repeated tens of thousands of times, you know, all over the country. But what makes more sense is she's a person who turned herself in at an ICE check-in. Now, whether you are a DACA, DAPA recipient, meaning deferred action recipient, or you're a person who has an ICE check-in, if you think that, like her, you could be arrested the moment you walk in, what is your incentive to do that? So the question then becomes, for these folks who have to check in with ICE, who have to check in with the government, if they stop attending these check-ins, which I think could be a result of this, then are you going to have people doing, as you said, going out and rounding people up?
What about DACA? What is the latest that that you've heard? We heard the president, the quote in the montage a few minutes ago, said it's a difficult decision. It may be the thing that he's most tormented about when it comes to this. Have you heard anything? And just give us a sense, maybe even Mary Jo, of what you've heard and seen in our area here as you've covered things around about the worry about DACA.
Well, just as Nigel said, you know, a lot of nervousness, a lot of concern. You know, the president has now said he's going to look at the DACA decision with his heart, in suggesting that that will not be a priority for deportation or for removal. But that offers cold comfort to somebody who is in that position, that they need a definitive answer, and that's not coming right now.
And Phil, we'd also heard from folks who are DACA recipients who really don't want to see their family separated. So they don't want to be seen as a special case. They don't want to just say, oh, we can stay, but our parents perhaps can't. So that's going to complicate things too.
And also, this is the idea this in Seattle, I think, this week, the student who was picked up for a DACA violation because he was suspected of being a member of a gang, didn't actually find any evidence that he was, but he was suspected of it. But there are these gray areas now that we just don't know.
Well, it's going to become a question of, you know, part of the requirement is that, you know, you have a clean criminal history. You came here before 2007. And again, that you don't have any of these quote unquote misdemeanors. Now, how the government decides to start enforcing those things is going to be the question. What is quote unquote a misdemeanor? You raise the issue of this Washington State individual. If you look, his lawyers filed something today which showed somebody in the process somewhere had made alterations to his confession or statement to make it look like he was confessing to being a gang member. You can see where the whiteout is on the statement itself. So that does not, as Mary Jo said, it's cold comfort, and it's also not a really reassuring notion to people who, again, may want to or have been engaging in this process. They've been turning themselves in, they've been checking in, they've been going through what they believe they should be doing, and now they think that could actually be, you know, the walk to jail.
And then Mary Jo, just shifting gears here for the last comment in this particular segment on this, but the issue with Medicaid expansion, this is what you've been covering all week. Boy, excitement for you, right? as the future of as the ACA is being hashed out, opponents of Arizona's Medicaid expansion are still trying to fight how it did it, how the trying to ask the state appeals court to kill what they say is the legal tax, the hospital tax. So give us an update on that and how that's all kind of intertwined with what might or might not happen with the ACA.
We now have the Court of Appeals with a case. They've got to decide, is the way that Arizona enacted Medicaid 3.5 years ago in a very contentious knockdown, drag-out session, was that legal? Is imposing collecting an assessment from the hospitals, is that a tax? If it's a tax, then they didn't have enough votes to make it happen. If the court finds that that assessment is just that, it's a fee, then we're fine and good. But it's a couple of things. Whatever happens in the Court of Appeals will very likely go to the state Supreme Court. And then we've got whatever might come out of Washington, which could, you know, undercut everything.
And that's what I was going to ask, Mary Jo, because you mentioned Governor Ducey saying he wants to make sure there's a plan in place.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how dramatic could this upend the whole situation if, in fact, because Arizona has been counting on federal funds to make this work?
Well, you've got thousands of people, you know, who are getting their health insurance because of Medicaid expansion. You have hospitals that have, you know, seen much reduced ranks in the emergency rooms. And probably at the state capitol, most importantly, it's like $1 billion to the state budget. So if the feds, you know, walk back Medicaid expansion, and the minute then the state loses money, and the minute that Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, is repealed, that hospital assessment, which underpins Arizona's plan, goes away. So clearly, the governor's got enough budget headaches. He doesn't need this one.
This is the Friday Newscap here on KJZZ. It's the show. I'm Phil Latzman along with Steve Goldstein. Our special panelists, Nigel Duara from the Los Angeles Times and Mary Jo Pitzel from the Arizona Republic, will continue the discussion on the week's news in just a moment here on 91.5.
And good Friday morning. It's the show on 91.5. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix along with Phil Latzman.
And it's our Friday Newscap with our special guest panelist, Nigel Duara, who covers Arizona and the Southwest for the LA Times, and Mary Jo Pitzel, who covers state government for the Arizona Republic. And now, let's hear some more of the voices in the news this week.
Morally wrong laws need to be defied. They were defied in the Civil Rights Movement, and they need to be defied today.
This is the United States of America. We were built on laws. This isn't about being mean or being hateful. It's our immigration laws.
I like to make a secondary motion that we challenge this ugly, nasty, racist law.
It was a decision not to become a sanctuary city, so I think I'm very happy about that. The issue as far as revisiting SB 1070 is ludicrous.
This in no way is designed to limit initiatives that are coming from grassroots.
All right, in order, we heard there are public speakers for and against Phoenix becoming a sanctuary city. That debate taking place this week. Included among them was City Councilman Michael Nowakowski. And then from the state legislature, Representative Vince Leach defending his proposed bill to make it harder to get initiatives on the ballot, such as Prop 206, which raises the state's minimum wage, did in January. So we'll get to that in a moment. This sanctuary city battle, we heard the chants of shame on you earlier. That really is shame on you a lot. I think that was at a rally over the weekend, but this was actually outside of City Hall, which it kind of explained the conundrum that the city of Phoenix faced in making this decision not to become a sanctuary city. Nigel.
When I'm looking for subjects to profile, you know, I like to find somebody who is sort of caught between two dynamic opposing forces and kind of how they're navigating that. And I think that Phoenix's mayor right now, Stanton, faces that exact conundrum. He has two numbers on either side of him. One is called 287G, which is assisting the ICE folks, which he does not want to do, the immigration folks. The other one is SB 1070, which instructs him that I believe this Phoenix cannot be a sanctuary city, that no city in the state can be a sanctuary city. So I think that in looking at him, I find his conundrum to be fascinating. I find that every action he takes, or non-action, or every statement he makes, or the day he doesn't make a statement, is taken as indication of his feelings one way or the other. And what Phoenix does from here, I mean, I'll leave to the more Phoenix political reporters, but certainly as it goes for the state, what's playing out here, playing out in Tucson, playing out in smaller cities, is the same debate, is how do we navigate between what the law says we have to do, which is not be a sanctuary city, versus what a lot of our voters, especially in places like Tucson, want us to do, which is to provide a place where people can go and not face detention.
And though we're talking about a different agency, we have the MCSO now, Maricopa County Sheriff's Office, trying to rebuild relations with Paul Penzone. Mm-hmm. And of course, new police chief Jerry Williams as well said they're running into a conundrum themselves as far as how do we get the community to trust us more again, and that's going to make the timing even tougher.
Yeah. And what's also interesting, I think, is that you know, the SB 1070, which most of the provisions were stripped out by the Supreme Court ruling, right? But this remains, and this is obviously something that has become more prescient and onerous to people. But it's that provision of SB 1070, which people don't remember, is now very prominent, Mary Jo.
And that's why the Phoenix City Council, you know, ultimately, you know, denied the application to or the request to apply to be a sanctuary city. They said, no, we got to follow the law. But, and they've appointed a task force of three council members to sit down and try to figure out a way around this conundrum. And they're supposed to have a report back, I think, by the end of next month.
Mary Jo, are we in a world right now, and I know this, not, but just based on the vibe that may be down at the Capitol, is there any reason to think that after the way SB 1070 was mostly overturned, is there any stomach down there to do anything similar to this, or is there such an eye on what Washington might do? I mean, are there lawmakers who think, oh, this might be a good idea now?
Yeah, I think for the most part, I mean, with a few notable exceptions, the Capitol has gone pretty quiet on the whole immigration front. This is, you know, there is a growing sentiment, it's taken a while, that this is a federal issue and has to be dealt with there. And we've got a White House that says we're going to deal with it.
All right, let's move on. A pretty big energy story this week, maybe the transition, the passing of the torch as far as energy is concerned, the SRP closing a Navajo generating station in 2019 after months of speculation. And, of course, we heard on the campaign trail about trying to revive coal, the coal business and the coal industry. Apparently, NGS is not going to be one of those places where that's going to happen, as they've realized that, Nigel, you've done a lot of reporting on this, they realized that it's just not going to make sense for them to continue to operate a coal-powered plant.
Right. And as we discussed earlier, you know, this was apparently market forces forcing their hand. This was not, you know, the specter of environmentalists or something from the East Coast coming in saying that thou shalt not. When you report on coal plants, a lot of it is based on where the coal goes. Very little of it is about consuming coal in the U.S. Most of it is for the Asian markets that are very hungry and consume coal, so it comes out of Idaho and goes through Washington and Oregon. This is so unique and it's so different because it's coal being mined on the nation, I believe, or in and around the nation, and then being consumed in that same area. So you have all of the regulatory problems that come with mining it, you have all the regulatory problems that come with burning it, and then you have the health impacts of using it there, and you have the entire economy structured around it.
So right, and you should mention thousands of people could lose their jobs, right. And that's what's really worrying people
yes.
up there.
Right.
That's the number one thing. But then the number two is transition taking place, right?
Sure. Yes. The people themselves. It's not an economically stable place to begin with. When you remove this economic generator, I mean, the impacts could be more devastating.
And Mary Jo, just capping off on that. Here in Arizona, with all the talk of how to regulate solar and wind, and it's becoming more efficient and affordable, it seems like, and more people are warming to it as the logical choice, it seems, as we move forward, if everybody's on the same page with that way. What are you hearing from legislators?
It's one issue in the transportation realm. It's another when it comes to what fuels our energy that gets electricity into our homes. The Corporation Commission has, pulled back some of the standards to incentivize solar, and with a strong assist from lawmakers who don't
right.
like it. They think it's, not a level playing field. But interestingly, in the transportation sector, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, but Senator Bob Worsley is he's—
Yeah, talk about it now.
Yeah.
If you
okay.
want to, please, this leads right into the conversation about the gas tax.
Sure. Senator Worsley is the chairman of the Transportation Committee, and he's, looking for ways to get money to the roads. Well, one way to get money to the roads is to stop stealing money from the road fund to help fund the highway patrol. His idea, his non-tax increase idea, because we cannot raise taxes in Arizona, is to impose a series of fees, and he's targeting alternatively fueled vehicles. He himself drives a big fancy electric SUV, and he likes to tell people that he paid a whole $10 mm-hmm. to register that vehicle. So that strikes, you know, the general populace is extremely unfair. And he says, yes, I know that, you know, electric vehicle owners, this was part of the enticement for them to make that switch, is that they would get lower registration fees. But better to make that switch now when we've got like just 3% of the fleet that's electric, because it's coming, people. It's coming. We're going to have, you know, a big, you know, a lot of our vehicles powered by electricity. Well, it remains to be seen. But in the meantime, his proposal to impose these fees got out of its first committee. It's going to be an interesting debate, but it is a creative solution to some of these budget dilemmas that ultimately take their toll on our roads.
And Nigel, for the publication you cover, the LA Times, energy issues are looked at, I think, a little differently across the border, right?
Definitely. And if I can put in a personal plug here, I drive a Honda Civic on the border on some of these terrible roads. I don't care what happens. Just please fix them, because I can't deal with these bumps anymore. Yes, it, of course, California different.
All right. Well, that is Nigel Duara, who covers this region here for the Los Angeles Times. And also joining us here on the newscap this morning was Mary Jo Pitzel, who covers state government, a longtime government reporter for the Arizona Republic. Hey, thanks both of you for coming in. Great discussion.
Of course.
Thank you. And